Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Talking Newspaper for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding areas. This is Rob Pym and I'm standing in for Alex again because unfortunately his back is not yet fully recovered, but he's hoping to be with you next month on the Saturn programme. This is the Saturn, of course, for the week ending the 12th of January 2019. We're already into the second week of a new year. It does move fast. Our music is something a little bit different, thanks to good friends of ours at Hertfordshire Chorus. It's called Ubi Caritas, which means where charity is, and the first line is actually in full, where charity and love are, there is God. It's a Gregorian melody, and it's been recorded and adapted by many different composers. This recording of the version by Du Rufflet, a French composer and organist and teacher, from the 20th century, which of course the century before were the one we're in now. Hard to believe that's the truth, but it is. It's sung there by the Hertfordshire Chorus, and as I said before, we're very grateful to them that they allow us to use extracts from their recordings. It's great to have friends like that. Right, we're going to go on to the programme now itself today, which will contain the news stories, the best news stories, the major news stories from the Hearts Advertiser, and a few other things, including the radio listings, as we call it, keeping you up to date with what's happening on the national radio. Right, over to our newsreaders now, anxiously awaiting to get into the meat of the Hearts Advertiser this week, and those readers are Angela, Jackie, Lisanne and John.
Hello, my name is Angela. And my first article is headed St Albans lauded as the top location for commuting into London. St Albans has been named the top commuter city for London in a national survey. The survey was conducted by Yopa Property Limited to create a London commuter guide, helping to identify the most affordable and accessible places to live outside of the capital. By collecting data on average house prices, commuting time and new rail fares, the guide identified St Albans as the top commuter city, with Luton coming in second place. As well as coming top overall, St Albans was ranked second best for commuting time at 18 minutes, and also has the highest number of trains per day. Yopa's former local estate agent for St Albans, Jack, said, "St Albans is a gorgeous cathedral city, which has plenty of character, a bustling centre and lots of open space. Most of my sellers tend to upsize in the area, while Londoners come here for the fantastic schooling and excellent transport links. You can get a train straight into London's St Pancras in around 25 minutes. Other factors that Yopa considered when ranking commuter towns were proximity to good schools, low crime rate, the London terminal nearest to offices, and abundance of local pubs. St Albans' status as an ideal commuter town was potentially put under threat by a hike in rail prices. Fares increased by 3.1% on Wednesday, January the 2nd, which is the highest rise in prices since 2013. Daisy Cooper, who is the parliamentary spokesperson for the St Albans Liberal Democrats and the coordinator for St Albans Commuter and Passenger Action Group, said, "I love living in St Albans, but for commuters like me, it comes with a hefty price tag. The timetable chaos and recent price hike have been particularly bruising, and we, the St Albans Commuter Action Group, are now getting reports that some long-term commuters are being priced out of the commute altogether. Ours is a magnificent, vibrant and welcoming city, but potential commuters will have to learn pretty quickly how to let off steam." The London Commuter Guide, which allows commuters to search for towns based on what factors are important to them, is available at www.yopa.co.uk.
Hello, my name's Jackie, and my first article is entitled "CCTV proposed for notorious crime-ridden path after 1,200 support petition for change." Plans to install CCTV along a scary walkway, which has been plagued by antisocial behaviour, may progress further this week. Approximately 1,200 people have signed a petition calling for more cameras along the Alban Way in response to reports of crimes including drug dealing, reckless cycling and assault. In one incident, a man was pushed off his bike and beaten, and on another occasion, a group of teens threw stones at a jogger. The petition says, If there were CCTV down Alban Way, the community would feel safer and these offenders will not continue to get away with these crimes. At a St Albans District Council SADC meeting on December the 5th, the possibility of CCTV and accompanying lighting on the route was referred to the Community Safety Scrutiny Working Group on January the 10th. One of those who signed the petition, Adrian Le Riviere, said, "The area is extremely secluded, but yet provides huge benefit to those who use it daily. Those people deserve to feel safe in doing so. Possibly the installation of help points should also be considered." Some signatories recounted their own experience of crime along the path. Madeline Bates said, "Fed up with this wonderful route being blighted by violence and threats of violence. Someone setting up a wire between two trees this week has got to be the tipping point. Someone could easily have been killed." Amy Tanner added, "I got harassed while cycling home in the dark on the Alban Way by some kids blocking the path with a tree and threatening to steal my bag. I reported it to the police, but by the time they had got there, the kids had gone." Claire Starmer remembered, "I was also assaulted earlier this year when walking home at 5 p.m. on a Saturday. A group of four teenagers cycled up behind me and threw a bottle at the back of my head." At the SADC meeting in December, Councillor Roma Mills said, "To what extent lighting will address the crime problem, I don't know. But I think it is something to do with the fact that it is out of the way. People do not see it, not many people walk along it, and certainly if you think you are going to get beaten up, you are less likely to walk along it. There needs to be a more visible police presence," she said, echoing calls from Councillor Richard Curtoys and Councillor Daniel Chichester Miles. She added, "Crime is being committed here. People are being attacked. I know one young man who was attacked 2 years ago and it had a massively bad effect on his mental health and his confidence and he really became quite paranoid about being attacked again." Representing Ashley Ward, part of which encompasses the Alban Way, Councillor Anthony Rowlands stressed that incidents are not isolated. He said, "Certainly over the last couple of years, there has been a concerning rise in the amount of antisocial behaviour, reckless cycling, motorbikes and indeed some ugly altercations with people using the park or the Alban Way. Certainly the event described is not an isolated incident, but is far more serious than any that have come to my notice." He said he hoped CCTV would send a message that illegal activity will not be tolerated. "I think we do owe it to residents to do all we reasonably can to make the Alban Way safe, recognising that there are practical concerns." Councillor Caroline Brooks said there is a knock-on effect of crime. "I have spoken to residents who say their teenage children are actually too scared to use places like Long Acres because the fear of being attacked by gangs who will make their getaway along the Alban Way." There were also calls for CCTV and better lighting to be considered for other parts of the district, in line with the Herts County Council, HCC, transport strategy, which incorporates increased walking. Councillor Mary Maynard said, "That has its advantages in terms of the reduction in our carbon footprint, the reduction in the amount of road users. However, for many people, particularly women, there is a real concern about using those very quiet roads and perhaps unlit roads." However, some councillors raised funding and feasibility issues of lighting and surveilling such a long pathway. A report on the possibility of CCTV will be discussed at 7 p.m. on January the 10th in the SADC Council Chamber.
The headline is "Closure of Vegan Restaurant is Blamed on Lack of Customer Support." A St Albans restaurateur has revealed the reason behind her closing up her shop. The shop is called No Moo Moo, a vegan restaurant in Heritage Close, and it's having to close due to a lack of customer support following negative reviews on social media. The owner, Wanda Henriksen, said that the power of a minority of people posting harsh comments can really damage the reputation of a small business. Just one bad review on TripAdvisor can really do a lot of harm. "I just want people to realise," she says, "that they should not be so judgmental of small businesses." Reviews on the site had criticised the venue's apparent lack of atmosphere and poor customer service. Wanda also blames a failure of her heating system, which required £3,000 worth of work, as contributing to the business's eventual demise. She said she worked a 90-hour week for over 7 months to ensure that her customers were getting what they wanted. Part of the issue, the owner explained, is that it's very hard to find and keep a good chef when you're a start-up company restaurant. She had a few really good chefs, but one of them was headhunted and offered 3 times his current salary on the condition that he would leave straight away. Wanda said, "I was left a first-time restaurateur with 150 bookings that I could not cover. It was really upsetting." Based at one of the best locations in the city, with views over the Vintry Gardens and St Albans Cathedral, No Moo Moo also received lots of positive feedback from customers. The food on the menu was all plant-based and enjoyed by customers who were not exclusively vegan. Reviewers online have said that there is delicious food, gorgeous decor and wonderful service. Others enthused, the staff are super friendly and the outside seating is lovely and comfortable. Customers added, "An absolutely inviting place that I took my niece to for breakfast. A lovely variety of food. I can recommend the scrambled tofu and the smashed avocado with sourdough bread." But Wanda is figuring out what to do next. She says it will definitely not be in catering, which she claims is a horrible industry.
Hello, I am Lisanne, and my first article is entitled "Superwoman Runs 1,500 miles in support of Isla." A runner conquered seemingly impossible feats every single month of 2018 to raise £6,000 for a sick child. Throughout the year, Claire Wallace took on a 12 long-distance ultramarathons in aid of 3-year-old Isla Austin, who needs continuing funding for potentially life-saving treatment. Isla was diagnosed with stage 4 high-risk neuroblastoma after a growth appeared on her cheek in late 2016. Further tests revealed tumours growing in her kidney, legs and ribs. Although the Leverstock Green toddler is currently in remission, her chances of relapse are very high and only 10% of patients survive a reoccurrence. During a 3-month whirlwind campaign in 2016, her family raised £135,000 to pay for an experimental clinic trial of the bivalent vaccine at New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Centre. Claire has now raised a further £6,000, which will go towards Isla's ongoing treatment. The 36-year-old ran 45 miles across the Chiltern Hills and along the Grand Union Canal in the Country to Capital Ultra in January, 50 miles in the Thames Trot Ultra from Oxford to Henley in February, and 100 miles in the Viking 100 from Herne Bay during March. For the Viking 100 race, Claire bagged third place for women. During April, she ran constantly for 24 hours around a 400-metre running track in the Crawley Aim. She described this particular event as a real mental challenge because of its repetitiveness. Claire jogged 60 miles of hilly trails on the Rushmore Estate as part of the Ox Ultra in May, 52 miles from Stroud to the Broadway Tower in the Heineken Race to the Tower Cotswold Way Ultramarathon in June, and 63 miles in the Jurassic Coast Challenge from Poole Harbour to Bridport in July. Into the second half of the year, Claire was reminded that humans are not in charge as she battled driving rain in the Wye Valley Challenge from Chepstow to Hereford in August. During September, she took on a challenge closer to home, the St Albans Stampede. Claire managed to cover 56 miles over 12 hours of constant running in the event around Hartwood Forest and No Man's Land Common. She received a car sticker and a T-shirt for overcoming the Limestone Way Ultra 50-mile run in October, and she came second in the 6-hour endurance relativity run in Northampton during November. To end the challenges, Claire competed the SVN Festive Frolic in Dover, covering 60 kilometres down Samphire Ho. All in all, counting training, she clocked up 1,500 miles over 12 months, the equivalent of running from England to Serbia, Ukraine or Moldova. Claire said, "I am pretty impressed with myself because you never know what is possible until you try, and I am really proud to support Isla and her family in her treatment. I feel grateful I did it without any injuries and all in one piece, but I am having a rest in January." Before 2018, Claire ran about one ultramarathon each year. "It is incredible what your body can do when you put your mind to it, and there is no way I could moan about what I was going through when Isla is going through treatment like she is." Claire thanked Hob Salons on Checker Street for all their support. She added, "I am really happy about raising £6,000. Everyone has been a great support. There is such a lot of treatment she needs. There are still a lot of scans, and her parents have to pay for all that. They are a really normal, down-to-earth family, and to see them take it on and do what they can to further Isla's treatment is amazing. They have no expectations, they are really nice, and they never moan." Rick Austin, Isla's father, said her treatment is going well. They have travelled to America numerous times over 2018 and will make the trip for a final time in March next year for scans, bone marrow retrieval, and the vaccine injection. She will then have scans in the UK for another year, but will not be out of danger until at least 5 years in remission. He said her checkups are positive. The neuroblastoma has a very high rate of coming back, so this vaccine is showing really promising results. But it is a trial, so she is not out of the woods at all. Claire has shown us fantastic support. She has been amazing. A huge thank you to her. To donate, visit www.justgiving.com/campaigns/charity/solvingkidscancer/ISLAAUSTIN for Isla Austin.
A letter now from Helen Burridge, who's the manager for St Albans BID, and it's headed "Evolution, Not Extinction, is Future of City Centres." In response to Mr Weaver's letter, Tackling High Street Gloom, in the letters page on the 3rd of January, I wanted to wave the flag, bang the drum, and generally promote a voice of positivity about the state of city and town centres, and particularly of Harpenden and St Albans. While I agree with much of the sentiment of the letter, the words gloom, death, crisis and dead end are being used all too much nationally in the press, and I'd like to change the record. If you say something enough times, you'll surely begin to believe it. We as a human race are sociable beings. We must meet with people, have contact with other humans, engage in discussion, seek advice and opinion from our friends and also from experts, and spend at least some of our time sociably. Town and city centres, as the focal point for a community, will never be removed from human existence. How we use that space and how we plan for those changes in use are simply opportunities that we must harness now to support the inevitable evolution. So, it might be that time spent in shopping centres may be falling, but purpose-driven visits are increasing. A national fashion chain reported to BID that their St Albans branch's footfall was amongst the lowest in their portfolio, but the spend per head is amongst the highest. Click and collect may be on the rise, but there is often additional spend when retrieving or returning items. Our local audiences are decisive and often display hybrid shopping habits, i.e. they'll change from click and collect to in-store impulse purchases, to online research and in-store spend, and finally to purely online, depending on the product and the price point. In this environment, it's not hard to see that a business must work to secure the consumer spend that is available to be had. I'm a big believer in controlling the controllables. St Albans BID is working at the highest levels of government on business rates, parking, and the thankfully small vacant unit issues in this area, as Mr. Weaver outlines. However, change on those issues will be slow and incremental. BID can help with marketing, promoting St. Albans as an excellent place to shop and socialise. Shoppers will spend on average 51% more on retail if they use hospitality facilities than someone who doesn't. Put simply, you'll spend more money in the shops if you stop for a bite to eat. And given our excellent reputation for food and drink and pubs, coupled with our mix of knowledgeable, unusual and quality brands, independents and boutiques in St. Albans and Harpenden, we can once again repeat the mantra from Forbes last year. Physical retail isn't dead, boring retail is. So to the readership of the Hearts ad, I ask, do not be part of the wretched voices lamenting the death of the high street while showrooming in our excellent boutiques to then leave and purchase online. Pay for the excellent advice, knowledge, curation and experience in front of you. As Mr. Weaver suggested, support the businesses that provide outstanding service. If they've taken the time to select the very best examples of a product, so you don't die in a 5 billion hit search for a watch online, reward that store with your custom. Use your town and city centres to socialise with your family and friends, and the businesses that you love will be the community that you want to create. With 2019 offering us a feast of uncertainty ahead, perhaps you can control your controllables, the decisions you make with the money you spend, to positively impact the high streets near you. They're not dying, they're evolving. Be a part of that process.
And now an article by the President of the Chamber of Commerce, Alistair Woodgate, entitled Challenges of the New Year. It's important to have goals in business, and the new year is often seen as the perfect time to set some resolutions we'd like to make going forward. Each new year brings a different set of challenges, but of course, 2019 has Brexit written all over it, a challenge that no small to medium enterprise quite yet knows how to handle. The anxiety and uncertainty over Brexit dragged the economy almost to a standstill at the end of 2018, acting as a drag on business activity and discouraging consumers from spending. As we enter 2019, we are now only weeks away from formally leaving the EU. As the clock ticks down to the 29th of March 2019, Parliament remains divided and complex areas of disagreement still need to be resolved. We can't afford a series of own goals. All of this leaves SMEs with little time to respond. Mike Cherry, Chairman of the Federation for Small Businesses, FSB, has made a plea to the UK government. As Brexit approaches on the 29th of March, the government must give proper help and support on how we to comply with whatever will be required. Adapting to whatever the new trading circumstances with the EU are will mean changing business procedures, taking valuable time out from running a business, and for many it will involve paying for external expertise. Small businesses account for some 93% of all businesses in our district. With such a vital role to play, our businesses will require even more attention and support in 2019. And there's nothing like talking to other business people for sharing issues and challenges, sparking new ideas, refining old ones, and of course making essential contacts. In updating business plans, many of us will be looking at ways to minimise costs, tighten up credit control, and make the most of technology and social media. Flexibility will also be a key factor. Not only the ability to identify and respond quickly to market opportunities, but flexibility for our staff. Our employees are our most important resource, and if they are happy, motivated and productive, they will help deliver the business rewards for which we work so hard to achieve. We have many great businesses locally and a vibrant, collaborative business community. For many businesses, 2019 will be about trying their hardest in everything they do. Very few people regret what they've done, but many people regret what they didn't do. That can simply be a matter of not having tried one's hardest. One key characteristic of our most successful firms is a focus on excellence, delivering added value to customers. This is one goal we can all keep on the top of our list in this new year. I have heard excellence described as being like magic. You can't measure it, but you know when you have it, and the results are miraculous. Let's strive for excellence, support our excellent local firms wherever we can, and together do all we can to fly the flag for the businesses in our district, whatever challenges and opportunities 2019 presents.
This next item shows a lovely photograph. There's our MP Anne Main standing in front of the old, ye old Fighting Cox pub with its owner, in front of a large banner which says clearly, "Ye old Fighting Cox business rate is now up 60% to a massive £33,000 per year." So our MP raises the subject of business rates in a budget debate after visiting several of our penalised city centre pubs. Anne Main was speaking in the finance bill debate when she brought up the problems city centre businesses are having with the rate system. She said, "The government were absolutely right to target business rates as a way of helping the high street and small businesses with a cut of 33% in rates for businesses with a rateable value of under £51,000. In areas like mine, however, with high property values, it's not having the impact the Chancellor might have hoped for. The new rate simply provides a cliff edge that penalises successful businesses in areas that are already plagued with high property values. We must devise a system that helps small businesses and pubs to thrive, not just those with low retail value." The debate came after Mrs. Main visited several St. Albans pubs which have been badly hit by an increase in their business rates in 2017. The Blacksmith's Arms, the Beach House, which is in St. Peter Street, the Boot, the old Fighting Cox, and the Six Bells were all visited by her in November. She said, "I recently met pub owners in my constituency who have been hit extremely hard by business rates. I have omitted a lot of my speech, but I'm pleased to say that I've secured a Westminster Hall debate on this matter next Tuesday. I look forward to exploring the matter further with a minister." Pubs in areas such as St Albans are seeing massive hikes in business rates, and this is not the help that was intended. Next Tuesday's debate will take place in the Grand Committee Room, which is separate to the House of Commons chamber and is known as a Westminster Hall debate. It will be titled "The Effect of Business Rates on Pubs," and Mrs. Main has asked St Albans publicans to write and contribute on matters such as what increased rates mean for their businesses and recruitment ability, and whether or not it will affect current employment levels. She added, "Pubs are a vital part of our community here in St Albans, and we must do everything we can to ensure that they are supported by central government."
Vital roadworks to take place thanks to increase in funding. 200 roads across Hertfordshire will benefit from maintenance work between now and the end of March, with an extra £7.8 million being spent by the council. In addition, £5 million already allocated within the council's budget means that more roads can be resurfaced than previously planned. Across the district, 14 roads in central St Albans will be maintained and resurfaced. 8 roads across Wheat Hampstead, Harpenden, Sandridge and Redbourne are being improved through resurfacing, and 10 to the south of the city. The fundraising will be used to resurface 68 roads, prepare 43 roads for future surfacing work, and carry out surface tidy-ups on 96 roads across the county. Cabinet Member of Highways, Phil Bibby, said, "This extra funding means we can do more maintenance and resurfacing work over the next few months than we had planned to do, which is great news for residents and road users. We'll be resurfacing and patching an extra 200 roads on top of the ambitious maintenance and improvement programme we were already planning between now and March. We know that the state of the county's roads really matters to residents, and they matter to us too. While we can't do everything, we're already investing £40 million into maintenance and improvement schemes this financial year, and this extra funding on top of that will make a real difference to roads across the county. The council received £7.8 million from the Department for Transport's Local Highways Maintenance Fund, which must be spent by the end of March. The specifics of the list is subject to change depending on the weather, road space and the availability of crew to carry out the work.
A 1954 Cold War shelter in Brickettwood has been recognised as a Grade 2 listed building. Historic England took the decision to list the shelter on November the 21st due to its historic and architectural value as the last remaining example of an L-type shelter. It was designed to take over the running of the railway network from London Euston if war arose and is located between Brickettwood Station and the railway cottages. St Albans District Council portfolio holder for planning, Mary Maynard, said, "Our railways are a major part of our industrial and social heritage, and of course there are many rail enthusiasts out there who are fascinated by all aspects of its history. I am pleased that it has now been given listed building protection, so that any modifications can only be made with consent from us." Planning permission was previously requested to build dwellings in replacement of the shelter. However, this received objection over the preservation of Greenbelt land and the historical value of the building. The application was withdrawn and the building was listed.
A series of workshops are being held on how St Albans Christmas celebrations could be enhanced. And there's a nice photograph showing a nighttime shot of some stalls and visitors at the Meraki Christmas Festival, which took place in Verulamium Park last year. This follows a festive season where acrimonious debate among residents culminated in the organisers of the Meraki Christmas Festival refusing to run next year's gathering. St Albans District Council's portfolio holder for business, Salih Gegusus, said, "These workshops will help determine the future of the Christmas market. It will also deal with the Christmas offering as a whole. We are very open-minded about how the market should be developed and will be receptive to ideas and suggestions that people would like to see. I urge anyone with an interest to come along to one of the workshops and contribute to this challenge." The workshops are on Tuesday, January the 22nd from 7pm and Saturday, January the 26th from 10am at the Civic Centre. The former will take place in Committee Room 1 and the latter in the Council Chamber.
And now an item about driving in Harpenden. Harpenden drivers have been invited to attend a public meeting on parking in the town. The Harpenden Society and Har Park have organised the meeting for 7:30pm at the High Street Methodist Church on Thursday, January the 17th. The chair of Har Park, John Talbot, says, "We've seen significant development over recent years and yet little in the way of infrastructure improvements. Many residents have no alternative but to rely on their cars to get about, and the town centre shops are losing business as people are forced to travel elsewhere. Survey forms have been distributed across Harpenden to record the views of business and customers on this matter. An awareness campaign has also been launched to put pressure on district councillors. Places at the meeting are limited, so people have been asked to book in advance via the link on www.harpendensociety.org. That's www.harpendensociety.org.
The Green Party has convinced Goviot Thameslink Railway to introduce new anti-idling measures at St Albans City Station. Bus drivers will now switch off their engines while they wait at the station, and new signs reminding them to do so have been erected in the bus layover bay on Station Way. Green Party District Councillor Simon Grover said, "I sent some concerns to Thameslink and I was very pleased they said they would look again at how they can reduce pollution. It's a particular problem in the layover area, and there are houses behind that area with gardens directly behind it, so it's a real problem. Both the Rail Replacement Bus Company and the General Bus Companies have been asked to instruct drivers to switch off their engines. The layover bay signs say, "Switch off engine for cleaner air," the same as the signs Thameslink put up with the help of St Albans District Council in the station's taxi rank in 2017.
We'll end this first part of our programme with a round of news about people and their work for local and national charities. Beaver Scouts from across St Albans District took part in a funathon to raise money for charity. The Beavers, who are boys and girls aged between 6 and 8, took part in sponsored walks to raise money for 5 charities. The walks were organised by Assistant District Commissioner Stuart Smart and involved Beavers choosing their own distances and destinations, some walking in a 3-legged race. They raised more than £3,000 in total, which will be split between the Beavers Colony, Verulamium at Play, Scouts Against Malaria, Rennygrove Hospice, the Hospice of St Francis and Playskill. The Beavers of the 18th St Albans Scout Group raised the most money and were announced as winners at the annual cinema trip to the Odyssey Cinema. District Commissioner Annette Payne presented them with a trophy and praised them for their fantastic effort. And there's a lovely picture of about 12 of these Beaver Scouts, all with big smiles on their faces and holding aloft their trophy.
A charity has thanked its 2018 supporters after extreme weather could not stop the tide of fundraising. Rennygrove Hospice Care has thanked everyone who braved the cold, heat and rain to raise money for its 24/7 hospice at home, family support and day services provided by the charity. Extreme weather drivers in 4x4s helped the charity's nurses to reach their patients during the Beast from the East winter storm in March. In July, 350 runners waded through 30-degree heat around an inaugural 5,000-metre farm run course, and joggers taking part in the Hearts 10K this October had to battle through torrential rain. Chief Executive at Rennygrove, Stuart Marks, thanked the supporters. "Your efforts and dedication are both impressive and humbling. Each contribution, large or small, is valued and important to everyone at Rennygrove as we continue to provide support and nursing care to thousands of local patients with life-limiting illnesses and their families. We really couldn't do it without you." And the article is accompanied by a lovely photograph of grown-ups and children taking part in the 5K Rennygrove Hospice Care Farm Run, jumping over hay bales in the sunshine.
Well, Father Christmas did very well in Harpenden in December. During the festive season, he raised nearly £8,000 for charity. The Harpenden Roundtable's Santa float went out almost every night in December, with elves carrying collection tins in aid of 4 charities. They were the Jubilee House Care Trust, that's a charity for children with learning disabilities, Luton and Dunstable University Hospital Neonatal Intensive Care Unit Appeal, Mosquito Net Distribution Charity called Against Malaria Foundation, and lastly, the Round Table Children's Wish, who arrange experiences for children with life-threatening illnesses. Matthew Hall from the Harpenden Round Table said, "We'd like to say a big thank you to all the residents who donated and also to the other community groups that helped us. They are the 9th Harpenden Scouts, the Harpenden Lions and the Harpenden 41 Club."
8-year-old Molly Turner from St Albans donated 7 inches of her hair to the Little Princess Trust. The Garden Fields school pupil joined the hashtag Hair to Spare campaign, which encourages people to chop their hair short for a good cause. The Trust provides real hair wigs free of charge to children and young adults who have lost their own hair due to cancer treatment and other illnesses. Having been in and out of Great Ormond Street Hospital herself, Molly would sit in the hospital restaurant, seeing children with cancer and other illnesses, asking what she could do to help them. Her mum, Stacey, said, I am super proud of Molly, who wanted to do this off her own back. Her hair is like a mermaid's, and it means the world to her. She really has empathy for children who have lost their hair to illness. Molly's hair was cut free of charge by Olivia at Trinder Hair Studios.
Now, a few more news items and also some events coming up in the next few days. Performer and songwriter to appear on BBC One Singing Contest as one of 100 judges. A Radlett performer, songwriter and vocal coach will be appearing on primetime TV as a singing judge. Simone Kane was headhunted to be a judge in the next series of BBC One's All Together Now, where contestants are tasked with winning over a panel of 100 experts for a £50,000 prize. If the judges in the show, who range from singers and songwriters to drag queens and burlesque dancers, like a contestant's performance, they stand up and start singing along. It was filmed last September in Manchester's Media City over the course of about a month, Simone said. She added, "I was so excited. It was a new opportunity for me to do something I've never done before, and primetime TV is the best promotion." In a career over 20 years, Simone has performed alongside George Michael, Take That, Emily Sandé and Joss Stone, and at high-profile events such as the London 2012 Olympics opening ceremony and the Queen's Diamond Jubilee pageant. She has also appeared on the BBC Music Awards and the BAFTAs. Simone added, "I didn't have any expectations, but I've done quite a lot of TV, so I'm quite used to that. But this whole thing was mental as an experience. It was nothing like I have ever done or seen before." The other judges were so varied across the board. There were lots of people I wouldn't normally meet. We're all singers, but we're so different in what we do. It was a great team. We were so lucky with everyone there, and a lot of people did the year before, so they were really helpful. Simone was contacted last summer over Facebook by a producer of the programme asking her to come and audition. She bagged her place on the show by singing "You Might Need Somebody" by Shola Amer, which was later re-recorded by Randy Crawford. Although originally from Essex, Simone has lived in Radlett for 15 years. The winner of All Together Now 2018 was Hartlepool-based singer Michael Rice with a performance of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. He won over 94 of the 100 judges in the final. Simone will soon be launching a one-woman show called Divas Through the Decades.
A new batch of tour guides versed in everything St Albans have finished their training. After 9 months of study and exams, 14 history lovers have graduated as the newest St Albans tour guides. The new group, who are recruited about once every 5 years, received a green badge and certificate by the Institute of Tourist Guiding in a ceremony held at Verulamium Museum. As patron of the St Albans Tour Guides Association, St Albans Mayor Councillor Rosemary Farmer was also in attendance for the ceremony. Committee member of St Albans Tour Guides, Terry Turner, said, "They have had all the advice they are ever likely to need, but all I would say is make sure to enjoy it. People who become guides in St Albans obviously have a great interest in St Albans, and they really want to make sure people enjoy themselves. The thing about the walks is although they have a historical content, they are enjoyable."
Here's an encouraging story. An 11-year-old St Albans schoolgirl has won a national engineering competition which asked for imaginative solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. Orla Connolly, who attends Loretto College, has won AECOM, that's AECOM, the large engineering design company here in St Albans, she's won their prize called Imagineers Competition with her design for a water pipeline running from wet to arid countries as a solution to water shortages. Orla's winning design was chosen by a team of judges, including AECOM's UK and Ireland chief executive, David Barwell. The Associate Director for Transport at AECOM's St Albans office, Karen Britton, said, "With this project, we're encouraging children to develop a passion for subjects in science, technology, engineering and maths at an early stage, and making the prospect of working for a company like AECOM one that is within reach, regardless of their background." Orla was presented by engineers from the Global Infrastructure Service firm with a technical drawing of her design and with vouchers for Kidzania.
Respect and enduring love is couple's secret to marriage. A happily married couple will be celebrating their 65th wedding anniversary with their six children. To mark their Blue Sapphire anniversary, Ryland and Susan Clendon have booked a meal with their six children and respective partners at St Michael's Manor Hotel on Fishpool Street. The couple met at Euston's University College Hospital in the early 1950s, while Ryland was training to be a doctor and Susan was a nurse. Hitting it off, they were married just 1 year later in Susan's hometown at Bath Abbey on January the 9th in 1954. They moved to St Albans in the 1950s, and in the decades that followed, Ryland worked at Marconi Instruments, while Susan taught child and family care at the former St Albans College of Further Education, now at Oaklands College. Having six children, the couple can now boast 19 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. Tom, the fifth child, who is now 55, said, "They love each other. They put each other first. They look after each other, and they always have done. They are very good people. They did volunteer work, fundraising, and school governing just to help people out. We are very proud of them and their message and the example they have set." Ryland did not formally propose to Susan, he said. They just met each other's respective parents and agreed to get married. He said, "I think one of the secrets of happy marriage is, although we are completely different in many ways, my wife is a very enthusiastic and dynamic person, and I am rather quiet. I decide things slowly and carefully. We both respect each other's differences, and we always reach compromises. We are still very much in love with each other, and that has not changed after all this time." Ryland is now 88, and Susan is 87. In a Hearts ad report on the couple's 60th diamond wedding anniversary party, Ryland said he never thought we would both make it that far because they both had serious heart troubles. On that occasion, the couple hosted a large family party at St Saviour's Church on Sandpit Lane.
An award-winning saxophonist will play Hearts Jazz next week. Top Reeds man, Alan Barnes, brings his quintet to the Mortings Arts Theatre in St Albans on Tuesday, January the 15th at 7:30pm. Joining Alan will be Mark Armstrong on trumpet, Robin Aspland on piano, Simon Thorpe on bass, and Hearts Jazz's Clark Tracy on drums. A Hearts Jazz spokesman said, "Aside from being a great entertainer and firm public favourite, Alan is also a formidable musician and composer. On Tuesday night, he brings with him top trumpeter Mark Armstrong and a sound rhythm section to breathe fresh energy into some classic material. A great night is guaranteed." Advance tickets cost £11 for club members, £12 concessions and £13 full. Walk-ups on the night are £12 for members, £13 concessions and £15 full. Book online at www.heartsjazz.co.uk/current-season or call the box office on 0333 666 3366.
Lunchtime concerts restart at a St Albans church next week with a piano duet. A programme of piano duets and solos given by Isabel Bayer and Harvey Daigle can be enjoyed at the Parish Church of St Peter on Wednesday, January the 16th. Their programme will include works by Beethoven, Franz Schubert and Johann Sebastian Bach, among others. In November 2011, Isabel Bayer and Harvey Daigle celebrated 60 years of delighting audiences worldwide with their piano duet playing. They have shown that four hands at one piano is a highly entertaining and approachable medium, and Isabel and Harvey are intimate with the huge wealth of music, from the well-known and loved to the unfamiliar and neglected. Wednesday lunchtime recitals at St Peter's Church start at 1 p.m. Admission is free, with donations in aid of Grove House Hospice Care. Following next week's performance, Catherine Clark, viola, and Marcello Dida, violin, will be performing on January the 23rd.
Ben Elton's wickedly funny adult comedy, Silly Cow, can be seen on stage here in St Albans later this month. The Company of Ten is getting the new year off to an hilarious start with their production of Silly Cow at the Abbey Theatre from Friday, January 18th. The 1980s was the decade when comedy turned nasty, politics turned even nastier, and newspaper columnists gave themselves permission to be nastiest of all. And this razor-sharp satire revels in the portrayal and ultimate comeuppance of one such raspingly scathing journo, whose pending court case for defamation does little to rein in her poisonous pen. Catherine Hyatt, who's directing this production, has taken as her model the screwball comedies of the 1930s to really emphasise the play's comedy payload. She said, "Rehearsal exercises really limbered up our fantastic cast and released their inner comic potential. It's been a blast working on this show, which has required a close working bond from the actors. At the speed this show plays, you have to trust your fellow cast members and be ready to anticipate any situation. I'm very lucky to have such a talented group of people to work with, and I thank them all for their hard work and the joy in the process of bringing this show to the stage." Still relevant to our celebrity-obsessed culture, the play tells the story of Doris Wallace, a bitchy woman's magazine feature writer who enjoys nothing so much as shooting down celebrities for sport with her double-barreled use of vitriol and abuse. But she hasn't reckoned with some dastardly plans afoot for a very fitting revenge. Performances take place in the Studio Theatre on Friday, January 18th and on Saturday, January 19th at 8 p.m. with a Sunday matinee on the 20th, that is, at 2:30 p.m. Then there are further performances from Tuesday, the 22nd of January to Saturday, the 26th at 8 p.m. To book tickets, go to www.abbeytheatre.org.uk or call the box office on 01727 857 861.
Johnny Cash Tribute. A tribute show endorsed by Johnny Cash's family will be celebrating the legendary Ring of Fire singer in St Albans. The Johnny Cash Roadshow arrives at the Alban Arena on Sunday, January the 13th. Back with a new production for 2019, award-winning frontman Clive John is dedicating this show to the 50th anniversary of the legendary San Quentin State Prison recordings from 1969. Alongside Clive as the Man in Black is his iconic wife June Carter, played by Emily Heway, a world-class band, the JCR Horns, and the Carter Sisters, all supported with full video projection. Songs from the San Quentin live album will be performed, mixed with all the hits and favourite songs that we all know and love. Clive John's tribute has won praise from Roseanne Cash, Johnny Cash's first daughter, who said his resemblance is uncanny. Tickets for the concert cost £24 and £22.50.
Now let's run through some of the radio programmes due to be broadcast over the coming week that you might like to listen to. starting on Saturday, January the 12th, when the afternoon drama, starting at 2:30 on Radio 4, is Riot Girls, Riot Days, and tells the story of the Russian feminist punk protest group Pussy Riot, who were arrested, put on trial, and imprisoned in Russia for planning a performance in a cathedral. The group's desire to confront injustice comes across strongly in this two-part drama, which concludes on Sunday afternoon from 3 p.m. on Radio 4. On Saturday evening, the Archive Hour at 8 on Radio 4 deals with chemists' dirty secrets. From the first chlorine gas attack on the battlefields of Ypres in 1917 to the Novichok nerve agent attack in Salisbury last year, chemical weapons have maimed and killed soldiers and civilians alike. Andrea Seller, Professor of Chemistry at University College London, explores the dark part that his profession has played in history and asks whether young chemists can better prepare for the moral hazard posed by this sort of weapon. Chemist's Dirty Secret is on Saturday evening on Radio 4, starting at 8 p.m.
Moving on now to Sunday, January the 13th, when you could learn about the hidden power of moss if you're an early riser. On Your Farm, at 6:35 a.m. on Radio 4, visits a project in Leicester which is producing moss to help restore damaged landscapes. This remarkable coating absorbs a lot of moisture and so prevents flooding, and it also stops dangerous carbon emissions from exposed peat. The actress and award-winning screenwriter Ruth Jones, she wrote and starred in Gavin and Stacey, will be Lauren Laverne's castaway on Desert Island Discs on Radio 4 at 11:15 on Sunday morning. A little later, at 1:30, Mary Beard uncovers the story of two Victorian sisters who wrote an iconic Latin textbook which was deliberately concealed because the sisters set it against the background of ugly late 19th and early 20th century opposition to women's higher education. Amo Amas, a musical, starts at 1:30 on Radio 4 on Sunday. And you can round off the day with David Meller on Classic FM from 7 p.m. He'll be choosing some of the music that he thinks should be considered for the 2019 Classic FM Hall of Fame. Each year, Classic FM listeners can nominate three of their favourite pieces to be included in the Top 300 Hall of Fame. Voting opens for the 2019 chart on Monday, so David Meller is hoping to widen the range of music included and perhaps topple Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture from the top position.
From Monday to Friday each week, certain programmes are broadcast at the same time each day. So if you like following Book of the Week, for example, at 9:45 every morning, then for the week starting Monday the 14th of January, it's Girl with Dove. The author Sally Bailey recalls her strange home life, which led her to bond with characters from books more strongly than with her own family. In the first episode, Sally's baby brother goes missing and her mother retires to bed for 200 sleeps, prompting Sally to turn to Miss Marple to try to make sense of things. Girl with Dove is the Book of the Week at 9:45 a.m. each day through the week on Radio 4. Still on Radio 4 at 10:45 each morning and repeated in the evening at 7:45, Caitlin Moran narrates an adaptation of her best-selling 2011 comic memoir, How to Be a Woman. Caitlin was a sort of wunderkind journo. She became the youngest ever Melody Maker reporter and a career columnist, battling issues with her weight and juggling job and family. It's a candid and funny take on New Age feminism. Then, just after 12 noon each day, and repeated at 10:45, in what used to be called the Book at Bedtime slot, you can hear Washington Black, the latest novel from the Canadian writer Essie Edigian. The story is set in 1830, around the life of an 11-year-old Washington Black who is a slave on a British-owned plantation in Barbados. And when a ruthless new master arrives, the boy's life is changed forever. That's Washington Black, which is on Radio 4 daily, just after noon, and again at 10:45 in the evening.
It's worth noting, too, that from this Monday, January the 14th, it's all change on Radio 2. Zoe Ball will take over the breakfast show from 6:30 a.m. through to 9:30 a.m. Sarah Cox will be in charge of drive time from 5 p.m. through to 7 p.m. throughout the week, and then Jo Wiley presents her show from 7 to 9 p.m. Monday to Thursday. On Tuesday, January the 15th, Michael Rosen returns to Radio 4 with a new series of Word of Mouth at 4 p.m, examining language and the way we use words. Along with Welsh comedian Ellis James, Michael discusses how we make language funny, and they contrast funny in Welsh with funny in English. That's followed at 4:30 with the start of another new series of a Radio 4 favourite, Great Lives. Matthew Paris presents, and the business innovator Rohan Silver celebrates the life of Colin Chapman, who created Lotus Cars and became a key figure in British motorsport in the 1960s and 70s. Great Lives with Matthew Paris is on Radio 4 on Tuesday at 4:30 p.m. And if you need a laugh in these dire times of confusion and Brexit, head for Radio 4 on Thursday evening at 6:30 when Mark Steele is in town. For the start of his new series, Mark Steele heads to Hastings in Sussex, where he regales his audience with a tirade of jokey observations about their town. Of course, 1066 looms large, with even a local butcher and a male waxing studio trading on the town's famous historical connections. Mark Steele's In Town starts on Radio 4 on Thursday, January the 17th at 6:30 p.m.
Well, thanks very much to our four readers today. Thanks to the producer of the radio listings, Jill. Also to our copy team, Mekki and Jenny. And to the distribution secretary, Fiona. We'll be back next week. Actually, it'll be Bill handling Red Saturn next week in my place. And as I said at the beginning, Alex will be here in a month's time. So we look forward to being with you each week now throughout 2019. Take care. Bye-bye.